tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Insert Here, a sex podcast where lust and learning meet. I'm your host, Kate Warren. Each week, I invite a new guest on the show to share their experiences outside the heteronormative or vanilla worlds of sexual expression. Guests bring a wide variety of gender, orientation, and racial experiences to life through their stories, all told through the lens of sex. They approach sexuality in fascinating ways and talk about how it's informed by who they are and what they've experienced. I invite regular people to share their best tools, tips, tricks for communicating, thinking about, and of course, having great sex. Today we welcome Bob, a straight-ish male Mexican-American guy in a non-monogamous marriage. He's been with his partner for 10 years. Some of the time they have been monogamous and some not. We'll be talking about the cultural differences between how Mexico and America think about masculinity and sex, what it's like to pay for sex, navigating non-monogamy, and how having a baby changed his sex life and perception of gender. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So to start out, as we do with every show, I would love if you could kind of walk our listeners on a very basic sort of 101 level through your labels, if you choose to use them.
Sure. Normally, I do not. Homo sapien, planet Earth, in terms of self-identification, in terms of sexual orientation, cis, male, straightish, heteroflexible,
cool.
Depending. Yeah.
So cis male, for those listening, means that you were born with a male body and you identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And can you tell me more about what hetero-ish means for you? Because that's kind of the label I use for myself, too.
Sure. I think all people are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Male, women, every other form, self-identification. I work for an LGBTQ firm, and that has definitely put me in the community a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So kissing men on the cheek and sometimes on the mouth without any emotion to say hello is pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
That said, through our open marriage, I've also learned how others have explored their sexuality, and people that you think would be straight, how they, you know, can kind of go between the line back and forth, depending on situations.
Cool. I love that. And I love that you have gained that experience through like empathetically talking to other people about their
definitely,
lives.
Definitely. I asked someone who is, for all intents and purposes, Latino, Hispanic, grew up in South America.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how do you handle it? Right. And he said, well, one day there was a dick next to me in group sex, so I sucked it. And I was somewhat shocked, right? Because
mm-hmm.
he did not consider himself gay or heteroflexible in any way, but it was just an experience. So yeah, someone always looking for fun and pleasurable experiences. It depends.
Cool. I love that. If you don't mind, and actually we probably should have talked about this before. Do you want to tell people how we met?
So one of my partners, invited me to, an event, a party at, which you were hosting. And it was only later that I discovered that, you and I had exchanged messages, on one of the dating apps, I believe one that...
We met on a threesome dating app.
There you go.
I love your round. We did. I host a weed club, and we so we met in person because we were you know, smoking and talking about cannabis with some friends responsibly and legally. And it was only after that that I think you actually realized that we had been talking but
yeah.
had never met through this threesome app where people go to like find people to join their partnerships.
That's right.
So... Hey, great
hey,
to meet you. Now
likewise.
We're friends.
I know. Here we are.
Awesome. So to start out, I would love to have you kind of walk me through your background a little bit. You grew up culturally Mexican.
Yep. I was born in San Diego, but we lived in Tijuana, Mexico. And while a U.S. citizen, culturally fully Mexican, whenever anyone asks me, depends where they're from, but I usually say Mexican. And I say this knowing that I am a quarter white. My grandfather, my mom's dad, blonde hair, blue eyes. So by all intents and purposes, I am Mexican American. But when you live south of the border, when you sleep south of the border, you are in Mexico. And, you know, you also, the border is a strange place, sometimes called the third nation. Not quite Mexican, definitely not American. So that's why I say the border region. But yes, it was very much Mexico. In a Catholic upbringing, and I went to Catholic school K through 12, and then my undergrad that I went to was also a Franciscan college. I actually had to take 8 semesters, all 4 years of religion.
Oh boy!
They had Eastern philosophy and classes like the Problem of God. So obviously we're very open, but it was a requirement.
Yeah, I had a very similar culturally religious background. None of the religious parts stuck, but the philosophy.
Sure, sure. No, completely.
It's really interesting.
I did a master's program that a lot of people were international development, Peace Corps, human rights, and they would say recovering Catholic. And I thought, don't you think that maybe some of that, that's why you're maybe trying to do, I mean, for whatever you think of the institution, liberal theology and just, you know, being a good person and neighbor, it can be good.
Sure, totally. So how did growing up in the border region impact your approach to sex and gender?
Sure. I mean, Mexico, like many other countries in the world, is a macho country, a culture.
Machismo,
yes, big machismo all over.
How machismo usually is, all over.
I mean, in every which way, right? I think of my friends and how they use different words, essentially mean homosexual, as derogatory. It's the first word, right? And I know a lot of has been done in this country to get away and certain celebrities from the term, you know, that's gay. In Mexico, there's sure there's some people that are trying to help, but it is ingrained in everything. I have a cousin who is not invited to any family outings. You're making me think, once when an aunt was going through some issues, my mom said, well, at least you're not, you know, suffering like so-and-so whose daughter just came out. And the issue was that my cousin had come out. Right.
Okay.
But that's where we are. It took a few years of me working at this firm for my mom to be like, wait, they're wonderful human beings. It's like, yeah, of course they are.
Cause they're just human beings.
Cause they're just human beings. I mean, right. I'd say if it wasn't for Ellen, my mom wouldn't be where she is.
Got right? it.
And yeah. So very much ingrained, and in that it's males can do no wrong, right? It's almost expected that you're a womanizer. It's almost expected that you sleep with many women, whether you have a wife and a mistress and a girlfriend. Whereas on the flip side, if you're a woman and you sleep around, you're considered a whore, a prostitute, very negative connotation.
Right.
And there is that double standard.
Sure. Can you tell me how that ends up sort of manifesting when you're growing up as like a teenager figuring out what sex means for the first time and how that's messaged differently for men and for women?
Sure. Again, I think of when I turned 15, while male quinceañeras are not common, my mom sent me to Europe on a youth trip, and she thought that I needed to explore the world, its cultures, and also its women. Whereas on the flip side, my sister was a complete opposite. They had a traditional quinceañera, and she did not see as many people as I saw in high school. And it was definitely much more protected. Whereas my mom was definitely, traditional, but she always said, if you need a condom, you stop here. I had friends that would go with her, 24 years old, like, I need a condom. It's like, really? You can't pay $1 for a condom? I did it once.
Call my mom. She's got you.
Literally. I did it once.
Okay,
I showed up with
progressive.
A friend. Yeah. Well, still very traditional.
Sure.
Very traditional. And if it was on the flip side of my sister, complete opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'd say that's sort of in Mexico, there's a lot of sexual innuendo and comedy. Right? Like, there's always jokes about being naked and having sex and flirting, but on the same side, it's like, oh, how dare you? Don't ever do it.
Right.
Right? And it's like, how do you balance both?
Well, it's a great example, and I think this happens in American culture a lot, where something's hypersexualized, but actual sex has so much social shame around it, where we're really incentivized not to talk about it.
Definitely.
In a way that's real.
Yeah, they put it in our face, and then if you like it, it's horrible. Right.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. How dare you like this thing that you're exposed to all the
all
time?
Day. All
right.
Day.
Exactly. So how were you and your friends talking about sex?
Sure. So, it was very anti-gay and it was very conquistador, okay. conquer when it came to women, definitely. And we were talking that when I told my friends that I had opened up, right away
became, like opened up your marriage,
opened up my marriage. Got yeah. And these are guys that I went to kindergarten with, mm-hmm. About three or four. I went to kindergarten. The other two we met in high school. So at this point, more than half of our lives. And one of them said, really, you would permit your wife to do this? Really, you would allow your wife to do that? And I said, just check out your language.
Yeah, this, permit, allow, right? Like they're something that you own.
Completely. And to the point that since opening up, and if ever I exchange messages with someone and they say trade, I right away say, you know, we don't own. So swap might be different, but the idea of trade, like it gets me, and I'm a stickler for words in that sense.
Sure, totally. Well, and it's interesting, right? Because the words that we use are, you know, some people say, oh, they're just words, but they are indicative of kind of this this larger underlying sort of cultural underpinning.
Yeah,
right.
Completely. Recently, I was thinking of like, oh, I fucked her, or we fucked. And I was like, no, we had sex. Like.
Right. The difference between have sex and fuck and yep. make love and mm-hmm. kind of all the other terms that we use for that act.
Yeah. So I.
Sometimes we fuck, but sometimes we just have sex.
That's right.
And that right. can be hot too. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Totally. So when you're talking to your friends about the opening up of your marriage and they started using these sort of ownership based mm-hmm. terms, how did that conversation evolve?
So, I said, you know, you shouldn't say that. And they replied essentially that Mexican Catholic women don't necessarily want to explore their sexual orientation or their relationship with their partners in a way that would eventually lead to an open marriage. Mm-hmm. And they said that they, Mexican women, prefer the kitchen and kids and the family. To which I said that, you know, if you put laundry or a tasty dick in front of them, they may prefer the tasty dick. One of them said that he would rather go to a whorehouse, which are very common in Mexico, twice a year to get it out of his system, if you will.
And
again, I said, as opposed to having real relationship talks with your partner mm-hmm. about your desires, your needs, your fantasies. And, you know, from she would never allow it, she would not want it, to it's just not for me. I could never deal with the jealousy.
Right.
Right. I could never picture myself. Yeah, I was, you know, home some months ago. And as I was telling him, yeah, like my wife loves the fuck. And, you know, like she gets enjoyment and because women get enjoyment from it.
You're a person with a body and you feel pleasure.
That's right. I remember once we had a threesome and weren't really attracted to the person much. And afterwards, my wife goes, you know, you can actually physically enjoy something really well without being attracted to someone. It was just
yeah, if you push the right buttons in the right order.
That's right. No, completely.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, and it's interesting too that they were kind of projecting their ideas of sort of ideal womanhood in that role onto their partners.
Yeah, completely.
Right, like, well, of course she likes the kitchen and laundry and taking care of babies better than like getting fucked by some other dude.
That's right. That's right. And I remember, I'm sure many listeners, or if you don't, Sex at Dawn, you know, almost a Bible for a lot of people in the lifestyle. But I think back of a line of, what is it? That the newness is the attraction, mm-hmm. right? Novelty is the attraction.
Right.
And of course, I'm sure their partners would love something new and novel.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get really attracted to that, like that new relationship energy.
That's
is
right.
Like the phrase that's used a lot.
Yep.
And it's that excitement and uncertainty and discovery and, you know, talking to that person, but navigating this thing that's like very mysterious.
Yeah, no, that's why I do it. I love it. I love it. That NRE is great.
No, it's amazing. So tell me a little bit more about kind of your perceptions of non-monogamy and what you like about it.
So the new relationship energy, I like the chase. So my job has me in a people setting. I need to be liked. I need relationships. I need to be charming. And sometimes I need to be flirtatious. Mm-hmm. And my partner has a complete opposite job. And while I initially said that I did not believe in as monogamy as being natural and in the institution of marriage, 4 years into our marriage, I would find myself out a lot, drinking more than I should, staying out later than I should, because the desire of being desired is nice. And you know when mm-hmm. someone's into you, and it felt great. And I knew that even if I went home, my work had me out so late that I wasn't going to have sex when I was going to go home. And I found myself close to being unfaithful, at which point, again, I'm a very eccentric person. And I asked my wife, and to her credit, she said yes. And we talked about it for months. What would it look like? How would it play out? I think initially she said, well, this is what you want to do. So I don't want to do it. I was like, great. Okay. She's like, well, if you're going to do it, I get to do it. I was like, yeah, that's the point.
Both those things are also fine.
Yeah. Right. And then she's like, well, do you just want threesomes? And I said, well, if it's that or nothing, yeah, I'll take a threesome. And she's like, well, I want to be one of the two women every time. It's like, okay. She's like, well, actually, I want dick. So why the hell am I going to be in the threesome with you?
So like, she was sort of figuring it out in live time as you guys were navigating.
That's right.
You know,
that's
what
right.
kind of setup would
like
work
said,
for you.
Like I said, for months, it's what we did. Just talked about it. Mm-hmm. And someone got us looped into the swinger scene. Mm-hmm. We did some swinger clubs, not necessarily our scene.
So when you say swinger clubs, for folks who aren't familiar, can you sort of give a little background about what that is?
Sure. So they would rent out spaces in existing clubs. And while there was some playing and making out, and I saw fingering once or twice on the dance floor, it was very much people that knew that they were open to having sex with others. And they would go to this place, and usually it was very women driven. The woman would approach either the other woman if you show up in pairs, and again, very women supportive, that women were always free. They could show up by themselves, but no man could show up unaccompanied.
Fantastic. We're all little post men in 2018.
Yeah, we went. It was nice if someone came up to you. That was kind of their way of saying that they were into you. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that would go to these would usually get hotel rooms nearby and then would decide to play. We never necessarily did that, but it was a nice way to get started.
Sure.
It's definitely a nice way to get started.
Sure. Cool. Mm-hmm. So you decided that wasn't your scene?
No, it was not. We did some kink meetup groups. Also, while we may like adventurous and rough and we've learned other things, straight up kink was just not what we were into.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
So we kind of developed our own thing through different apps and happy hours and meetup groups, looking for people that we definitely connected with at some sort of level other than physical.
Right. Mm-hmm. So having some sort of intellectual or
Emotional
connection.
Again, as I mentioned, when we were going into, we had a lot of rules. And initially we thought full swap, same room, ideally with married couples. And we quickly learned that that was...
So full swap meaning? Explain for our
that,
listeners.
Partner switch, essentially.
Yep.
That's
it.
That's it. And we thought in the same room, ideally on the same bed, right there, all out in the open, exposed. Mm-hmm. But none of us wanted to take them for the team. And then we realized it was really hard to find couples that we both meshed with. And then we did a double date. It was great. And then we did a second date. And then it was felt weird. Because what if I wanted to put my hand on the shoulder? How would my wife feel or her husband? And right away we finished. We're like, maybe we should date separately right away. And since then we did. And we still go out with couples that we both like. Mm-hmm. We do some meet and greets before to learn from others. Now sometimes people ask us to kind of, you know, explain our journey and the ups and downs. So, yeah.
Cool. So what would you recommend for people who are in currently monogamous relationships who are interested in opening up or exploring or starting that journey?
Sure. Talk to yourselves. Mm-hmm. Talk about orgasming. Again, 4 years into my
marriage. Different from ejaculation.
Very,
also
very,
worth
very
pointing
different,
out.
Right? And that Sex at Dawn says that for procreation, a man's orgasm is essential. Whereas for enjoyment, a woman's is whatever.
Well, and also men can come without ejaculating.
Yeah.
Like men are multi-orgasmic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something that unfortunately men don't really tap into.
Or no. Or, so many dudes don't know they can come more than once.
Yep. So learning that I wasn't always enough to give my partner an orgasm, right? And how sort of horrible I felt after that. Exploring with toys and saying like, well, you know what? This works. And then seeing it work and you're like, yes, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even her mental issues of like, well, but do you feel less? Do you feel I'm not enough? I'm like, I don't care. Like, if you're telling me this is what you're feeling, this is great. But whereas others or maybe even internally, you do start to think about like, bad, if you will, or not being sufficient because you have to bring something else.
Well, and also there's a lot of social pressure, like from our culture, that men have to be rock hard and able to go over and over again, and like never, you know, never finish, or like, you know, we can go for hours, whatever. Like, okay, A, that sounds terrible. B, it gets kind of boring, you know? And if you look at your partnerships as an opportunity to be a steward of the other person's pleasure, right? Where, 'cause everybody in a partnership is entitled to their own pleasure, and they're entitled to ask for different things.
That's right.
The service of that pleasure. And if you are being a good steward of that pleasure, you're like, hell yeah, it's just as meaningful if I get you off with this vibrator and a finger than if I put my dick in you.
Completely, completely. You know, and sometimes even the, I want to lay, or I'll just lay down and you can move however you want. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to do anything, and don't feel bad about using my hardness to get off however you want. You know, and when people ask, why do you do it? I do it for a number of reasons. But one of them is I like to see others get pleasure, be pleasured by me. Like, well, you know, it's an ego thing too. However that comes, you know.
Totally.
No pun intended.
Yes, all the puns here. Come on, it's a sex show. We have to. So, I think a lot of people in non-monogamous relationships talk a lot about compersion, which is the idea that you get pleasure from seeing someone else get pleasured, where you don't even have to be the person delivering that pleasure. You can just like sort of be a witness to them getting off. How does that factor into your relationship?
Yeah, and I thought more of my wife and her boyfriend than myself, right? I was out for a few days for work, and one of those days she said, oh, he's coming over. And it was like, great, I'm not there. I'm being a horrible husband and dad right now by not being there, by drinking till 4 a.m. for so-called work. But she's going to get some attention. She's going to fuck, right? Like, he's going to want her because she's hot and she's great.
Yeah.
And that made me really happy. And it wasn't always that.
How did you get there? Talk to me about how jealousy plays into all of this.
It's hard. And like life, it moves, right? Like, one day, like, you can do headstands and the other day you're struggling at child's pose. And jealousy is just like that. Honestly, ayahuasca helped a lot. I'm going to be
tell
honest.
Me more.
Yeah, so that was one.
Okay. So did you guys do ayahuasca together?
Yeah, interestingly, right around the time we started doing ayahuasca, it was around the time we opened our marriage. And it was by coincidence, maybe not, depending on how you believe in her. But that helped. That helped a lot. And
how?
So go into ayahuasca.
Why not? Ride this in. Here
sure.
we are.
So you go into ayahuasca, you cleanse, you prep, but you come in with an intention.
So ayahuasca, for those of you who don't know,
is a hardcore hallucinogen, a root that when mixed with a plant leaf, produces a tea-like substance.
Doing great.
Yeah, that will, I don't know. I don't know how to say it. Just help you explore. It's a lot of times done for therapy.
A lot of times it's done with like a shaman or a guru.
A guru. Highly advised to do it with someone who's facilitating. It's not recreational.
No.
You are putting in work. They say that one session, one ceremony is about 10 years of therapy. I'm a better person because of it.
Cool.
Completely. Okay. It has changed our lives, both, and in the circle that we get to do it with. But anyway, one of the times, my intention was, how do I get past jealousy? How do I let my insecurities and my doubt turn into positive ego? You know, not bad either. And during the ayahuasca ceremony, there's music that's involved. And the lyrics of the songs can sometimes be very touching. And the song essentially goes, love just wants to dance, sorry, I'm translating in Spanish. Love just wants to dance, it wants to paint, it wants to sing. And abuelita, she's usually referred to ayahuasca as a female deity, the grandmother, it was her slapping me in the face of saying, who the hell do you think you are to stop and control love? Love makes the world go round. And in a second, it was like something completely came off of me. And the very next song, in short, says, all the web that you have in your life and in your head, it's all self-imposed. So here I was thinking, I'm not enough. Will she leave me? Is my dick long enough? Do I last long enough? You know, all these things. And then it was again, her slapping me like, you're wonderful. You guys chose to make a life together. You're choosing to soon bring a child into this world.
Mm-hmm.
You share laundry, like it, and mortgages and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So again, and while you can't necessarily tap into the hallucinating feel during the ceremony, you can always tap into the emotional one.
Sure.
Of thinking, wait, I know better. I'm letting, you know, my emotion get the best of me right now. We are all one. We are connected. It's all good.
Right. So in your case, ayahuasca was really just a tool. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different tools that can facilitate these kinds of conversations. You definitely don't have to do hardcore hallucinogenic drugs to get yourself in a headspace where you can have a non-monogamous relationship.
That's right.
But the point being that you can use these tools to really kind of put down the burden that society puts on you to have to be a certain way, act a certain way, have a certain kind of relationship.
Yeah. And regardless of the tools, we still needed to talk.
Right.
Right. And that's when suddenly, you know, I wasn't always at compersion, but it was a tit for tat. Well, if you're out on a date, I should be out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
If you're out fucking, I should be out fucking. Why am I at the house taking care of the dogs and sweeping and cleaning the kitchen? And then later with ayahuasca, and just as you evolve, it's like, fuck, I don't want to go out. I want to lay on the couch. Great. Enjoy
yourself. Have fun your date. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. You know what? Why don't you stay out? Mm-hmm. Stay out. Let me sleep. Like, I'm good. So seeing that change has been wonderful.
Totally. So what different kinds? I know you said you went to different meetup groups and things, and people a lot of times reach out to me asking for like specific events that they can go to or blogs that they can read. What different resources would you recommend to people?
So like by name,
Whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah. So I'll share, like, I don't know if it's a good, example, cause I think they've kind of been closed. You see that there's a lot of, ego fights as well, in the different lifestyles, but, we went to, what was it called? Entree New here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was something called, I think Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like some people that had gone to that and split it off. So between OKCupid and we did the FetLife website for a bit. Mm-hmm. Again, not really our scene, but you start to see that at least here, and I'm sure in other places, the circles are actually, on the one hand, quite big.
Mm-hmm.
On the other, quite small, right?
Like, yeah.
You interact.
Like any city.
Exactly. You interact with a lot of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. I think literally meetup.com was another one that we did. And it was like millennial open people.
Great.
Yeah, recently there was one, Aberrant, that unfortunately has some leadership issues apparently, but what I've seen through Facebook right now. I think for us, connecting with people in person was really important.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever platform we used, an event, it was when we related, it's okay, let's like go have a coffee.
Yeah.
Let's like figure out that we're into each other intellectually, emotionally, and physically, and then let's figure out how it works.
Right. Like any first date.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you meet somebody at a bar, you're going to, maybe you'll sleep with them that night if the chemistry is off the charts and it's consensual, but more likely you're going to meet for a coffee and talk and see if you jive in the daylight hours before you
decide
to sleep
with
this person.
And while deciding to sleep with someone on a first date is and can be very fun, as we like to say, just because we're open doesn't mean we're easy, right?
Yes.
You need to woo me.
Totally. Well, it's funny. The only date I actually went on with somebody, like a couple from that threesome app, they shamed me during the date that we went on for accused me of being vanilla for not being fringe enough because they brought like a list of games for us to like really awkward social games for us to play at the table together.
Oh, wow.
And we're being really forceful about it. Like, you know, like get up and sing a song in front of the entire restaurant, stuff like that, you know, and then accused me like vanilla is a dirty word when in fact it's not, it's just a preference. But I'm not vanilla, and B, I thought it was totally reasonable to expect to be able to sit down and like share a pizza with a couple before having sex with them.
Completely, completely.
So and I knew that wasn't going to work.
Of course.
Because they had different ideas about how this was going
to
go.
Yeah. And unfortunately you do see that while people sometimes claim to be very supportive, it can also come off as very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate, definitely unfortunate on that. Yeah. Someone first or second double date, that we were trying to learn from them, told my wife, like, meet me in the bathroom, you know, and tried to like stick his hands down her pants. She's like, oh no, that's not how this works.
Right.
Right. Like that is not how this works at all.
No. Well, and so in like with any interaction, setting boundaries and expectations and being able to verbally communicate those things is really important.
That's right. No, extremely, extremely important.
Cool. Well, we're going to go to break really quick. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how having a baby changed your sex life. You're listening to Insert Here.
Both this and the theme song produced by P. Morris, DC-born, LA-based producer. Find his music online, soundcloud.com/P. Morris. We'll be right back on Insert Here.
Welcome back. You are listening to Insert Here, a sex podcast where lust and learning meet. I'm your host, Kate Warren, and today I'm joined by Bob, who is a straight-ish male who is in a non-monogamous marriage. Before the break, we were talking about how they sort of navigate those waters together, and now we're going to talk about what it's like to have a baby when you're in a non-monogamous marriage.
Yeah, it throws a big wrench into it, just timing-wise. Like, we don't have enough time.
Yeah, so tell me, so you have a nine-month-old daughter.
That's correct.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And I mean, the first, for any parents out there, they know, the first few weeks, the first few months, it's mayhem. It is mayhem taking care of a child, and time is very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, like, whereas before, when we first opened up, all I wanted to be doing was having sex with others, and I'd stay out really late, and I'd spend the night, and I just wanted to fuck. Now it's like, I want to see my child, mm-hmm. right? Like, I want to spend time with my family. Like, sure, I want to be desired, and having sex with others is still a lot of fun, but the priorities have definitely changed.
Sure.
And, you know, again, that said, I once read that in order to combat postpartum depression, it's really good for both partners, but specifically the woman, to go out and date, right? But it's very different if my partner and I decide to go on a date and hire a babysitter or a friend. In the back of our mind is, how's the baby doing? Have we received the call? Yeah. Whereas if she knows that the person she chose to bring a child with into this world is the one taking care, she can enjoy herself. Right. So on the one hand, like even before baby was born, I was like, you need to make sure that you can go out. And I will take care of the baby. On the other, we chose to breastfeed. When breastfeeding is the only source of food, that makes it really hard. Mm-hmm. Totally. You know, so we still message with couples and it's like, yeah, so we can meet you during the day with a baby. or would you be willing to come to our home and baby goes to bed around 6 or 7, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I don't know if you,
some seems reasonable.
Yeah, some people are just not into that. Whereas others are like, yeah, that works, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the reality.
Completely. And as we've opened up again, we've realized how many people have a quote unquote non-traditional relationship. Mm-hmm. And trust me, anytime we find open marriage couples with kids, we're like, oh my God, how do you do it? Right. Tell us more.
Yeah.
Like,
what
you
do
got
they
a
say?
5 and a 7 year old.
So you're back on sort of the learning curve for how to approach being non-monogamous.
Sure. Completely.
Kids.
Completely. Again, I mentioned, initially, we wanted the married couple, and it happened actually late into our pregnancy. And it was great.
Hell yeah,
they had twins. And we looked at them, sure, like with steamy eyes, but we also looked at them like, all right, you have twins and you still make this happen. So we want to learn from you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. It's very important. And again, seeing how many people who have kids are open, it's almost like, yeah, of course, because once you fucking deal with the child, like, you're open to a lot of things. Open to a lot.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Bringing a child into this world makes you realize that jealousy and competitiveness, like, those don't matter. Easier said than done sometimes, but
sure.
Yeah, that's a real experience. Whereas, oh, someone else fucked my partner? Whatevs.
As long as it's safe and consensual.
Sure. Always safe and consensual. Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that goes without saying. That's so interesting. So how did having a child change like your sexual dynamic with your wife?
Well, again, time, you know, we before child would have sex normally twice a day, morning and evening. And on weekends, I don't know, sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. That's no longer an option. And sometimes, because, yeah, we both want to, but we're really tired. The other day, I really wanted to, but I knew she was exhausted, and I knew the baby had cried from, like, 2 to 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. She was up with the baby. So it just changes, right? I mean, initially, whether it's C-section or not, like, you take about 6 weeks off. Mm-hmm. Completely. So that's a reality. And, you know, for her, which we did have an emergency C-section, the mm-hmm. mentality of, I have a gash, yeah. Right?
It's major surgery.
Major. Oh, and trust me, it got infected. It was crazy.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But having that, it wasn't just physical pain, but then the emotional and the mental.
It's scary.
Do you still think I'm pretty? Do you still think I'm hot? I have a big scar. You know, what will my boyfriend think? Like, all these things mm-hmm. matter. Mm-hmm. So practical time. No doubt sure. the time. It's sure. just really hard. So for us, when people, and I hate the what are you looking for? I can't stand it. Recently, I said someone that doesn't ask what we're looking for.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
they dropped me. but we're looking for people with patience, mm-hmm. Understanding mm-hmm. that we have priorities and responsibilities. And if you're okay with that, then yeah, we may hit it off and it may be great.
So what's the next frontier?
For us two?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When we talk about, like, ideally down the road, a commune with 5 to 6 couples sounds cool,
mm-hmm.
Where we're all raising kids together. Probably never going to happen, exploring.
I know other people who are also interested in yep. relations like that.
Yeah, so. And I think we've connected with people that are into, what is it, like, conscious community living, something like that. Mm-hmm. So around that, but exploring deeper, it's like, well, would you ever let me have a child with someone else? How would I feel? Right?
Yeah.
Like, can you make that connection? I don't think we're there.
That's a next level.
That would be definitely next level. we're not there right now. We're just trying to survive as new parents.
I think that's totally fair. Mm-hmm. Well, and congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
Like, good on you for recognizing that it's a process.
That's right. That's right.
For sure. So we are actually out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you have any last words you would like to share with our listeners?
Talk to your partners if you're thinking about opening your relationship. Don't ever do it to save the relationship. You need to go into it from a strong foundation.
Mm-hmm, totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Bob, and for listening to Insert Here. We are actively trying to represent as many different kinds of voices and perspectives on the show as possible. So if you or someone you know has a great story to share and things that everyone else could learn from, you can DM us on Instagram. I'm at GoKateShoot. Or you can email us at insertherepodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, you can leave us a little review on iTunes or wherever else you listen to your podcast. Stay horny.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.